and welcome to County Road Bobblers podcast. It's myself, Witch. I'm joined by two fantastic guests today. Roger Armstrong, who's no stranger to the podcast and being on. You've been on a lot of times now, Roger, haven't you? So welcome back as always, mate.
Thank you.
Can't see Roger.
Thanks, Dave.
He's got a fantastic Argentinian red wine in his hands as well. So I wouldn't expect anything less, mate, from a man of your calibre. Our well-loved local Liverpool Echo journalist, Joe Thomas. Welcome, Joe, for your debut on the Bobblers podcast. I know at times that the Echo had a bit of an up-and-down relationship with Evertonians, but I think it's fair to say from us Evertonians and certainly from the match day going Blues that I speak to, that actually you're held in really warm regard, Joe. So welcome to the podcast and well done you for some of the fantastic coverage you have had to write over this past 12 months.
Well, I really appreciate that, Dave, and thanks for your support and thanks for having me on. It's must say, I'm grateful to get the opportunity.
Fantastic. So, I've listened to a couple of bits of content you've been on lately, Joe. You know, certainly Toffee TV over the view from Bullens as well. And I'll start with you, Joe. And I know it's been a bit of a turbulent welcome to your tenure moving into sports writing and covering Everton. How have you found it, mate? And, you know, is it what you expected when you first got into it? Do you think it's a case of you're still learning as you go? Or, you know, have you enjoyed that kind of challenging period of time to actually cover?
Definitely a case of learning as I go. I've been a journalist for the best part of 12 and a half years now as I go through it. So, and always in news coming into sport. My first game covering Everton was in March, back in the last season when we went to Sean Dyche's Turf Moor to watch Burnley. That baptism of fire in that respect, obviously defeat that night, really put the cat amongst the pigeons and made clear that Everton were going to a relegation battle then, and one that we thought was hoped would be a one-off, but obviously we now know that it hasn't. I've enjoyed it. It's a privilege to cover a club such as Everton. People from outside would criticise or take the mick of us at this, but it's one of the biggest football clubs in the world. You know, it's got one of the most passionate, best devoted fan bases. And you know what, it's been an absolute pleasure to kind of start up and I've really, really enjoyed it, getting to know, sections of the fan base and getting to know the club as well. I realise I'm very, very fortunate to be able to do this as a day job. And even when things have been hard, they have been very hard at difficult times, different points throughout the last 12 months, just the realisation that, on a Friday afternoon or Thursday since Dyche come in, I'm going to Finch Farm and state-of-the-art training complex to speak to a football manager about football and Saturday and Sunday I'm traveling the country to watch some of the best sports in the world. I really am grateful, but it has been difficult at times. It's certainly it's not as straightforward as I thought it would be. I didn't think I came into it with naivety, but it's been harder than I thought it was going to be, and I thought it was going to be hard. It's definitely, it's a world that's a lot more political than I kind of perhaps gave it credit for, which is interesting. And it's a world in which, from news reporting, I've done a lot of public interest reporting. And normally when you're holding things like councils and police forces and governments to account, it's actually a little bit easier because all those organizations to a certain extent have a commitment to transparency and they have rules and regulations that they have to live up to when you're trying to find out what's going on. Normally it's a case that they have to put things out in certain areas. The difficulty is finding where they're just secreting the information. And once you get hold of it, you've got it. Obviously, once you come into things like football, you're dealing with private businesses and individuals and companies, and then it becomes a lot more complicated because you don't have a God-given right to access the inner sanctums of these places and the policymakers and work out what's going on. So I've enjoyed it. It has been hard, but it's definitely a privilege.
Fantastic, Joe. And you've definitely had a baptism of fire. I think, like many fans, we're just due a nice 12 months of Everton hopefully being in place with a bit of joy and happiness around, but we've just not managed to get there. It's been a tough 12 months. Well, it's been a tough couple of years. I think it's fair to say, and I'm just going to go a few things and come to you, Roger. Obviously, we've had the removal of AGMs. We had the kind of second successive relegation scrap. Obviously, with the process movements, you know, from the 27 campaign to NSN, not well, NS now, various other fan-led movements that have popped up over the last 12 to 18 months. We've had some, you know, poorly timed releases, should we say, from the club in terms of the headlock gate and the allegations there. Obviously, you know, myself and a few others decided it was fit to step down from the fans forum and the FAB and protest, you know, about the engagement and communications with the club shortly after, you know, some of us perceived Mashiri's, should we say, well, I found a bit of a delusional video, really, you know, suggesting that actually everything's okay at the club. Obviously, you know, we've had a bit of a reluctant letter that came out from the club from the chairman, Chairman Bill, as he labels himself. And then since then, we've had obviously mass resignations from the board, and that's probably not even touching the surface. So, Roger, what stands out to you, mate, as how did we get here where we are now? You know, what has been the catalyst of this? Do you think it's something that one particular area, or do you think it's a catalogue of things that have kind of led us to the position that we're in the moment, where the board have stepped away from the football club and we still have one man show at the top left over in what suggested as a temporary position?
Crikey, okay, nice easy question. Before I answer it, I'll try and answer it, let me just say personally, and I know a lot of other people would agree with me, Joe, that, you know, you've done a brilliant job covering the club so far, honestly and accurately, and I think you've been instrumental in getting the fans' views across. So thank you for that, and long may it continue. I think what we've learned, and if we ever doubted it, is that this football club is the property of the fans. And those who are working for it on the pitch, off the pitch, in any capacity, even those owners, investors, are simply guardians, and they are custodians, some people have called them. Whilst this business is a business and it operates in a financial world and in a competitive world where shareholders might want to go to an AGM, the real shareholders of Everton Football Club are the supporters, and without those supporters, we'd have been probably in League One by now, frankly. The commitment, home and away, especially the away support, the organisation that I know you've played a part in and many others have, to protest against the abject management of our club, is about the only hope there is, to be honest. I think the club is currently broken, I mean, and properly broken, i.e. it needs repairing in a root and branch way, not just a few sticking plasters. And I think it's broken for one simple reason, that there is now, unequivocally, the majority of the fan base do not trust the owner and do not trust the chairman. And therefore, when we talk about communication and we talk about the club saying things, the club does not speak with one voice. There is no voice of Everton Football Club. There is nobody who can come out, either as manager, director of football, chairman, chief executive, that we trust to speak accurately and truthfully. And I thought it was very interesting when Joe talked about dealing with some public sector organisations and councils and the like, and that they have an obligation to show some element of transparency. This football club, and this football club for a number of years, even before Mashiri came, but since Mashiri's arrival, has been scared to death of transparency. And I wonder why that is. That is because it's poorly run, poorly managed, and it's run by a bunch of people who are more concerned with their own personal interest than the good of the football club. And we're on our feet. We're dying on our feet. We're on our knees right now. We are absolutely broken. And all we can hope for is that the investment, as and when it comes, and it still seems to be 4 to 5 weeks off, it always is, that the investment from MSP Sports Capital, when it comes in, can be better than the shit we've had to put up with. And it really can't be any worse. I think Mashiri has been an appalling owner. I think his financial commitment, fine, but he's all but destroyed the football club. And we have a stadium still requiring funding, which will be beautiful and will be fantastic. But will we have a club left worthy of it? I'm very scared. And I've gone, I go in, you know, stages of disengagement to anger, to disappointment, to fear, and it's a mess. And if it wasn't for the likes of you and, you know, several other good Blues that I have a dialogue with, I wouldn't really have much hope.
Interesting. Thanks very much for that, Roger. And obviously, you know, you're a man that has talked about the business side of Everton for some time. You know, obviously, you know the Everton Business Matters podcast for many years, and obviously, you know, the kinds of latest podcasts that you've been doing, really drilling down into some of that mm-hmm. detail. You know, when the AGM did go, Roger, was that an instant concern for you? You know, and obviously you've talked about it's important to have dialogue with all fans, but, you know, removing that element or layer of transparency and the ability to ask questions.
No, I don't think it was, because I think it was always a smokescreen, to be honest with you. I think the AGM, I've been to three or four of them, the last couple in the Philharmonic Hall. And I remember, you know, when Mayor Joe Anderson was down, at, you know, with the audience, and Bill and the crew were up on the stage. It was a theatrical performance, that AGM. What you need is real engagement, and engagement for a football club goes way beyond the shareholder base. It's with all the supporters, and proper engagement, proper ability to ask questions, and ability to engage in a way that, what sort of club do the fans want? Okay, we all want to win the league and the Champions League. It ain't going to happen. But what kind of club do we want? What sort of players do we want? How do we want our club to present itself to the outside world, true to traditions, but in a modern way that accepts, you know, what you have to do to succeed in the Premier League, which certainly isn't what we've done in the Premier League era, where we've quite simply gone backwards. So no, the AGMs themselves may be symbolic, but I think the far bigger concern is a refusal, an absolute refusal to engage with the fan base, and a fear of that. And that is, you know, if you don't trust your customers, then you may as well wrap up. If you don't want to talk to your customers, we need new people running this football club, because we have some fantastic customers who pour money, good money after bad, to follow us, to support us, to produce merchandise and buy that merchandise, and to spread the good name of the club, and not just locally in Liverpool, but nationally and internationally. And also, you know, let me just say something else. I think that the fans have filled the void, not just protesting, not just getting on national media, but the fan media, the quality of the fan media that Everton Football Club supporters produce, wide-ranging, high quality, is superb. And the fact that, you know, the club doesn't engage with any of them, really, and truthfully give them access to players or to Sean or to Thelwell or to any of them. You know, I'd like to know from Joe how on earth he gets any reliable information out of the football club without naming names, because it must be an absolute nightmare to try and keep us informed. It must be, short of the team sheet, how on earth do you know what's going on, Joe?
It's a good question. And it's been increasingly difficult, particularly this year. It's a bit of a strange one, really, because obviously, you know, when businesses are under pressure, they're likely to clam up and almost become slightly more paranoid and see, you know, demons in the shadows everywhere. But one of the things I find quite interesting is to contrast the way in which the club was going into the relegation battle, the final weeks of the relegation battle under Frank Lampard, with the way in which the club was under Sean Dyche for the second relegation battle. And it was quite strange. Obviously, we had the false dawn with Frank Lampard, in the sense that whilst nobody would begin to suggest that everything was okay, what he did do was he managed to bring a lot of, certainly the match-going fans, on board with him as a personality. And, yeah, you know, I'm very careful to, I try to be careful to make this distinction when I refer back to this in writing. And I don't say that he kind of united the club and the fan base, but he certainly united Finch Farm and the fan base, you know, the playing squad and the players and the fans. Obviously, you know, it'd be ludicrous to suggest that there weren't issues in relation between the fan base or sections of the fan base and the board, you know, from even before that time. But amid that, there was almost, I guess, you can't have a feel-good relegation battle, but if you think of how it was in those final weeks, particularly from Chelsea onwards, you know, there was that wonderful kind of spirit of the Blues mentality that greeted everything. You know, there was a degree of unison. We had the, you know, the coach welcomes the arrival. You had that kind of feel good factor, games like Leicester away, and obviously the fact that you had good results back that up, but there was a sense that everybody was operating together for the same goal. And amid that, what Everton did, to their credit, was they maintained access, you know, throughout yes. that period, even though it was difficult and even though there was so much on the line, and at times it did look very grim. The club maintained that, you know, allowed the media to continue to speak to players. So, you know, you would normally, if Everton had the way it would normally work in the media is, for instance, if you have a game on a Saturday, then the press conference, the pre-match press conference is your last opportunity to kind of harvest content going into that weekend. Because obviously you've got the game on the Saturday, which then provides you with things to write about for the Sunday and the Monday. But if you've got a game on a Sunday or a Monday, you've effectively got an extra day or two to fill, because you've got the Saturday papers as normal, but then you've got the Sunday papers without your match reports. And at that stage, what would normally happen is, whenever they got a game on a Sunday or a Monday, they would normally put a player up in the week for, you know, reporters such as myself to speak to. They put an embargo on the interview till Saturday night. And what it means is there's an extra layer of content. And from that, you get an extra opportunity to go to Finch Farm. You get the extra insight. You get to go behind the scenes and speak to the people that are doing it. You know, it was very clear that they had a positive message that they wanted to sell at the time. They wanted to kind of exploit the fact that there was a fan base there that was willing to listen to the players and to the staff around the club and the message, and everybody could get on board with it. From a very early stage in last season, you know, essentially from Christmas onwards, that completely dried up at Everton. This season, you know, the relegation battle, you know, I remember just the second half against Brighton, just being sat in that state, you know, the first game where we really heard the chance of, you know, in relation to getting rid of the board. And the second half, it was just a horrible atmosphere in there. Not a horrible atmosphere in terms of anything particularly negative, but just the sadness and the resignation around the place as you kind of watched 40,000 people kind of almost look at their feet and think, have I got the energy to drag another, you know, to drag the club through this again, like the fans did so valiantly the season before. And what I think are many reasons, many areas of disappointment, but one of the things that I found a little bit frustrating this time round was the fact that, and this was, you know, I did a front page in after the Brighton game calling for more communication and putting Ken Wright and Mashiri and Denise Barrett-Baxendale on the front page. And you know, the club obviously weren't happy with it, but kind of the message that I was trying to say to him was this, and you could see it in the stands at Goodison on that night game, was that you've got a wonderful fan base here that will do anything to help the club, to help the players on the pitch at least, and they proved that the season before. The fans were the difference the season before. Now, these fans are actively questioning whether or not they can do that again, because it was patently clear at that point Everton were going to be in a relegation battle. Now, you've got this wonderful asset. Why don't you do your best to exploit it, to make the most of it, to bring these people on board? And instead they were met with, well, it wasn't even just silence. You know, we then go into the depths of January and we have obviously the Southampton game and the allegations that were, you know, were made around that match. And then on that, you go into the January transfer window and the lack of information that kind of just added an extra veil of chaos and problem to the fact that we had a transfer window in which it was clear that Everton needed to make signings, and yet they didn't. And it just spiraled from there, really. And, you know, at no point really in the last few months of the season, at no point under Dyche have Everton really sought to engage with a fan base which is worth points to them, and points to, if you want to, even if you want to look at it selfishly or cynically, you know, points on the pitch for Everton are worth money for Mashiri. He needed them to stay up, you know, more than anything. Yeah, yeah. And yet there was just such little opportunity to engage with anybody from the club. And it was just really, really difficult as a result of that. Because
Joe, when you did the front page, the front page that said, you know, we need communication, and you said the club weren't happy. This is something which and I have talked about, and I talked about it with Paul on the results business as well. What on earth is the club? So who is saying I'm not happy? Because my problem is the club never says anything.
No.
Bill Kenwright might say something, and Farhad Mashiri might say something, and Sean Dyche might say something, but none of them are the club. So when you say the club weren't happy, who wasn't happy?
Yeah, I mean the kind of the machine of the club as much as anything, rather than kind of individual personalities. You know, obviously.
But are they following orders? Are these people following orders, or are they exercising their own free will to block requests? Are they being told not to engage, or are they thinking that that's the best way of doing their job?
I think if I'm honest, I think what happened is that it kind of Everton caught itself in a vicious trap where things started to go negatively and people started to ask questions, and rather than engage, it basically holed up in the hope that things would go away. You know, and I think perhaps we see this when we think of like the fan advisory board's interview with Mashiri and things like that. I think that in mid-January, as things were really at such a low point, I think that at that point there was a belief that, one, that the disenfranchisement of the supporters was based on performances on the pitch and was essentially superficial, when obviously we know that it wasn't. It ran deeper than that. So there was a belief that if performances could improve, then, you know, things would automatically get a little bit better. And I also think that, you know, I still think that even, obviously, we saw it in the Mashiri interview, there was a genuine belief, and this perhaps shows just how shambolic things were at the club at the time. There's still a genuine belief, even at that point, that they were going to make the reinforcements that we needed to get themselves out of the relegation battle. And this is still middle of January. And, you know, after that, you end up in a situation where they end up selling Anthony Gordon. And, you know, obviously there'll be, you know, lots of people have different opinions on how good he is, how good he was, how good he may become, and whether the money was worth it. But one thing it certainly did was it weakened the side that couldn't really afford to weaken at the time. So, I mean, because of the failures to improve things, you know, on the pitch and in the squad, that brighter day where it might become slightly easy to communicate didn't come. And things just kind of, and although there were obviously, you know, there were peaks and troughs under Dyche, it wasn't all plain sailing, but there were, you know, positive moments where it looked like Everton might get out of the relegation battle a little bit earlier. But it's almost like the first reaction of the club was to get to go on the defensive. I think there was an almost perhaps a naivety in the belief that things, because this is Everton, will automatically get better. Something will happen to make things better. And then perhaps a belief that they might be able to open up. But because obviously things were, you know, as you were rightly saying, Roger, because things were fundamentally broken, things didn't improve. That sunny day when you could open your doors and, you know, people can, you know, you can, Alex Iwobi can speak to journalists on a Thursday for a Sunday piece about how wonderful the fans are, just didn't materialise. And the more it was a snowball effect, as the longer that went on with, the more hostile I think the club felt the environment it was operating in, and the more it clammed up. And you ended up in a situation where obviously things didn't get better until the last day of the season, until, you know, the final whistle on the last day of the season, because it really was that close.
Absolutely.
And as a result of that, you end up with months of, you know, some of the most important months in Everton's modern history, and a void from the club of information. You know, you're right, and trying to find out what was going on in that period is very difficult. But even trying to, you know, I'm a journalist, I have to do everything I can to try and be balanced and to try and be fair as much as I can. And, you know, sometimes you're there and you're trying to make as clear as possible to the club, to people, to say, look, there is a, you know, you might think the world's against you here, but there is a platform here for you to have a say in this. This is a two-way dialogue, or I have to present it as a two-way dialogue, or do my best to present it, give you the opportunity. And the door was always open for people to come out and say, this is why you should trust us. This is why you should be reassured. This is why things are going to be okay, or this is why things might be difficult, but why the fans should have faith in this board, or, you know, hold on till the summer and things like that. But nobody was willing to take the responsibility. No one was willing to take up that mantle. And you end up in a scenario where, obviously, you know, during the final, you know, months of the season, you just have this huge void and this huge disparity. This, you know, the bridge has fallen down. There's a vacuum between the club and the fans, and it's one that still exists because, and I think, you know, the second layer of all this, which we'll probably come to, is the fact that we're, what, 5 weeks into summer. and this still hasn't really been addressed, and it's obviously got to be addressed. No one can be no one can be ignorant to it. You know, even if the the most influential people at the club were to perceive think that they've been hard done by in this respect, no one can be ignorant to the fact that there is a problem that needs fixing.
And we've been, you know, the one carrot that's been dangled is this Kevin Thirlwell's done an interview with his nan or something that's going to be released, and it caused a little bit of a storm in the middle of Elon Musk's Twitter howler over the weekend. I mean, what? He's promised to do an interview. He has or he hasn't. And then all of a sudden, the poor old fans forum, and you can say what you like about the people, but I'm sure that they're very well-intentioned. The poor old fans forum are having to do the dirty work of the club in trying to keep the fans informed and almost end up being the club and representing, not representing the fans, but representing the club. And that's, it was all completely backwards. And apparently when you say this month, it doesn't mean this month, it could mean any month. So where on earth are we with that?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, a big part of why I stepped away from the fans forum was, well, firstly, I felt it was the right thing to do to stand actually with fans. You know, and at that time, I thought it was worthless engaging with a club actually that in a position where the majority shareholder is still saying that, you know, he's got a fantastic board of directors and how wonderful Effink is and how rosy it is. And, you know, I just couldn't for 1 minute, you know, look myself in the mirror and you know, be meeting up with the club actually when I'm hitting the streets every week, you know, protesting, standing shoulder to shoulder with fans. So it was the right thing for me to do. Obviously, you know, we've seen this whole fan engagement standard come out on the back of the fan-led review. You know, as part of that, part of the review found that they suggested that some fan consultation they felt was a tick box exercise, and actually that, you know, at times that clubs aren't actually engaging fans on key decisions, but more informing them after decisions have been made. You know, I certainly, you know, have seen both sides of things. I think Everton do engage in the community quite well. You know, there is a level there's a level of that type of stuff that they do very, very well. You know, we've seen some fantastic examples like Sir Jay Deacon, and they've really helped him with his mental health initiative and a variety of different things. But, you know, the key decisions, you know, the tickets, you know, the season ticket prices, the ticket pricing, it always feels a bit after the fact, you know, that they're actually engaging with fans. Obviously, the fan advisory board, we've seen, you know, the board of directors not turn up. You know, they can, you know, blame, you know, animosity as they try to paint fans. But, you know, I think fans actually have been really peaceful. All the protests I've been to have been inclusive marches, and, you know, they've been, you know, fans singing, no violence or aggression whatsoever. You know, they've been organised, and I think, you know, so much so that it was commended, you know, in some of the security meetings as well with the football club. So I think, you know, this kind of element of saying, well, we can't turn up at the moment the way fans are. Well, actually, you know, I think they should have turned up. It's their job. They were still being paid, you know, so they've only just left the football club. So there was an element of asking questions. Well, you know, what's the point in the fan advisory board? You know, what is the point at the moment with the fans forum? As you say, Roger, you know, there is no one leading the line. You know, there isn't an Alan Myers that's actually making himself available at the front, you know, answering questions, talking about, you know, how the club are feeling. You know, there does seem to be a void there at the moment where there isn't anyone that's actually, you know, that single point of contact for fans. You know, and I think as fans, I think it's fair to say that we're almost felt in a way that we don't have a voice. You know, and that's why the protests have started. We don't feel as though any of these mechanisms that exist are representing us match day, you know, going fans, and they're not really able to put our views across, which is why the protests have ultimately started to occur and continue to grow. Joe, obviously, you know, talking about that, and, you know, do you feel as though, you know, Everton could move towards a model where, you know, these things need to actually be treated a lot more seriously, you know, where, you know, could we do with an Alan Myers, for example, or that kind of figurehead, you know, not just for the fans, but for the media, where you've got that one person who can constantly address some of these narratives that come out?
I mean, it's a difficult one, really, because, I mean, it's very easy to kind of to criticise communication. And then when you've actually trying to come up with solutions, to it, it's difficult. So, you know, there aren't that many organisations that have a dedicated, you know, it's not, there aren't many organisations that are, say, you know, like the American presidency, where you have an official spokesperson, they come out and they answer questions, and you can quote them on behalf of this, you know, this and that. I don't really think that is necessary, to be honest. I think that Everton's just it's a broken machine that just needs fixing, and I don't really think anything as big or as unusual. Because yeah, you know, I couldn't tell you like there aren't. I don't know anybody who does that job for any other football club. In fairness, you know, most of these things are communications as a team, as a unit, as a business. I think it's drastic in the sense that obviously there needs to be an overhaul at the club, but really more than anything, it's just a change of attitude, I think, just to join up thinking. You know, one of the things that's been patently clear as a problem over, you know, the Moshiri era, and certainly come to the fore in the last few years, is there are clearly so many different bases of power, and there are clearly lots of different people with influence who are very who talk without necessarily, you know, singing off the same hymn sheet. You know, you have got what's going on at Finch Farm, where, you know, you'll have obviously the football in operation, and, you know, have Sean Dyche, who's the person that we see more than anybody else up in the media, and who I thought it was very, I'm not saying that necessarily it should have been Kevin Farwell, but I thought it was very, very poor how at the end of January, after the transfer window and the way it was unfolded, after the month and the way in which it unfolded, it ended up and the promises, the claims that were made on behalf of the club about, you know, what business was going to be done when it was so clearly needed. And then you have the sacking of Frank Lampard, which was just messy. And then you have the appointment of Sean Dyche, which becomes messy because, you know, you can literally stand on Finch Lane and watch him go in and out of work for 3 or 4 days before Everton even utter a word to say that he's there. And I appreciate there are legal complexities and paperwork has to be signed off or not, but someone has to be aware of the optics as well. And those optics, you know, weren't very good. Just have them come in at the back door or something like that. You know, it's a big complex. But I thought it was very poor after all that, when there were so many questions, that before the Arsenal game, his first game in charge, you know, they put Sean Dyche up as the first person who's obviously, you know, what, he's a strong personality. I don't think he has any issues with, you know, with doing it necessarily. But it was just so bizarre that nobody from the club said anything at the end of that transfer window. I just couldn't really understand it. I thought the fans really did deserve an explanation. And I thought that somebody saying something, it doesn't have to be a named spokesperson, but a statement from the club just to kind of give the fans something to hang off of, would have just divided. It would have put a full stop on a terrible January and allowed the Sean Dyche era to start without problems. Instead, what happens is, you know, Sean Dyche turns up for his first press conference and he's got a room full of journalists that are all asking him about a transfer window, behind the scenes boardroom issues that he's got nothing to do with and barely any experience of dealing with, because he's only just walked through the door, and that isn't really fair on him. No. You know, really, I just think that what Everton just needs to streamline itself in terms of who's making the decisions and what they're happy to communicate, and then having a united front in communicating, because it's no good having the club saying, releasing a statement on one thing, and then not, you know, Sean Dyche saying another thing because he's not, or saying he's not aware of it, and then Fahad Moshiri going on Talksport off his own back to then, you know, say something a little bit different. Yeah, you know, that's just absolute chaos. You know, silence isn't always the worst thing in terms of communication. You know, there are times when I think that is an adequate form, but the problem is with Everton is none of it seems to be particularly well organised or agreed upon in advance. And, you know, they speak up at the wrong moments, and then they're silent at the wrong moments. And okay, you know, someone might be critical of that and say, well, they can't do right for doing wrong. But, you know, it is important to have a presence. It is important to engage. Communication is hugely important. And it's something that, you know, the key figures at the club, because you just look at what we've seen over the last 5 months. Look at Fahad Moshiri on Talksport. Look at Fahad Moshiri, you know, in the fans forums. Look at Bill Kenwright and his in his public letter, look at Bill and Denise and what they wrote in their accounts, which was their first opportunity to publicly address anything at the club, you know, since the fallout in January. And, you know, they almost, well, they didn't even pretend as if nothing happened. You know, Bill kind of almost went on a very, you know, it was a tone deaf kind of response to some of that. And I just think that the naivety is really unfortunate. And I think that, to be honest, you know, it's, you know, it's not necessarily taking the mick out of the fans, but it's, you know, people, sometimes you have to have the humility to accept that you need to engage with people, especially your stakeholders, especially your fans, upon whom so much you rely on. And sometimes it's not almost about saying the right things. It's about showing that you're trying. And I don't think Everton really showed that recently. I mean, it's a very long-winded answer, and I'm not sure I've really answered your question there, Dave. I think really they just need a joined-up approach. I just think that the decision, people who are making the decisions need to know what the strategy is. And they need to communicate that effectively to the people who are paid to communicate it effectively. And then they all need to sing off the same hymn sheet. So if you go to Fadhma Shaari, or you go to Bill Kenwright, or you go to Sean Dyche, or you go to the press office, you might go to four different people, but you'll get the same answer from everybody, because, you know, there's a consistency of an approach. And that is something that hasn't existed for a long time at Everton. And then that becomes incredibly problematic for everybody.
It's an interesting one for Frank Show, and I know, you know, by all means, I think you've explained it very well. And Roger, I'm going to come to you, because it's more of a business question. I want to kind of put your way base, you know, just building on what Joe said. Crandall team done a survey, as they always do. You know, they get quite a large uptake on their survey every year. Their 2023 survey suggested that 5% of fans felt only 5% of fans felt optimistic about Everton's prospects over the next 5 years. There was, let's just get a few more of these. 0.7 fans answered yes to the question, is Everton's board fit for purpose? That won't surprise anyone. 95% of Everton fans are either unsatisfied or very unsatisfied with the performance of Everton's chairman. 92% was Denise Baddocks-Baxendale. 92% unhappy with Farhad Mashiri and the communications at the club. So as you can see, there was a running theme of Everton fans just really being unhappy with the club, not really seeing any optimism and looking at the future. Roger, you know, I think there's an element to what Joe said. You know, when I obviously my day job is communicating, head of communications for 97,000 people. And anything that I draft or write on behalf of, you know, any of the senior leaders that I do, it's the exact same, you know. And I know I'm going to talk about modern services. I know I'm going to talk about getting better outcomes. You know, it's a common theme every single, you know, time I communicate, any of the senior leaders communicate, they're always, you know, basing the communications around the company strategy, where we're looking to be in 12 months' time, what we're looking to achieve. Everything's succinct right across the organisation. The more you say it, the more people, you know, take that on board. And, you know, it's quite clear to the people who are, you know, on the shop floor as such, what everyone's looking to do. From a business perspective, Roger, do you feel, you know, that we are lacking an identity? You know, there's a mention there, obviously, if you speak to, you know, even a couple of people in the senior leadership team, you might get a slightly different perspective on things. Do you think there needs to be this big reset moment of, you know, what are Everton in 2023? You know, where are we looking to be in 12 months? How are we going to get there? You know, almost, you know, I think the last time we heard it was almost Marcel Brands talking in that AGM when he was talking about this. But again, you know, we're kind of rushing Fellwell out to talk about strategy. But actually, you know, we haven't even got the investors. You know, could these investors come in actually, you know, and decide that we're going in a totally different direction in 6 weeks' time? How is it chaos, Roger? How do we solve this chaos and this situation that we find ourselves? And how do we realign everything to make sure that actually fans, not only fans understand it, but, you know, it their own, you know, their own staff and all the moving parts within a football club understand where we're going?
Yes. How on earth do we do that? I don't think there's a plan. I don't think there's ever been a plan. Does the club need an identity? Yes, it does. The signs, the green shoots of an identity came from David Moyes using the phrase the People's Club, which may or may not be misguided, out of date now. And some of the identity has come from the fans in recent years, Spirit of the Blues, We Are the Goodison Gang, pyros and all of that malarkey. Fans are the club. I can't say that often enough, because we are. The people at the club have no plan. There is no strategy. And that might be, I think that Joe is 100% correct. There doesn't need to be a communications person who comes out and communicates. What there needs to be is a plan that everyone agrees on and everyone can talk about. Just like you say, you've got your buzzwords up, so I'm not being disrespectful to them, but you've got your language that you use, the key terms you want to put out there about vision, the next 12 months, engaging with stakeholders, positive outcomes, and all of that. It's not bullshit, it's reality, okay? And you don't need a spokesperson per se, because almost every other Premier League club, other than those that got relegated, their manager speaks and everyone goes, yep, he's talking on behalf of the club. We know what he, I mean, I don't just mean Man City, where it's absolutely obvious and they've really got their shit together, or Arsenal, who've got their shit together. I mean, perhaps Tottenham haven't, but whatever. But people say the right thing on behalf of their club, and they say well-intentioned things. I felt so sorry for Sean Dyche, because he had no support. He was appointed to save us at a time where we were almost unsavable. And he did perform a miracle to keep us up with the players that we've got. I'm not quite sure how he managed it. That win at Brighton, I have no idea how that happened or where it came from. And thank God for Nick Pope's save from, you know, Castagne in the last minute at St. James's Park. Otherwise, we'd have been down. But, you know, it is not right. It is just simply wrong to appoint someone to run your football club and for no one to introduce him to the media, for nobody from the board or the director of football or the owner to have the minerals to sit next to Sean Dyche on his first press conference. That is absolutely unforgivable. And all it reflects is there is no plan. So without a plan, there's nothing to say. There's nothing to communicate. So Joe's right. You go into hunker down mode. Once the football's good, imagine if we beat Liverpool 6-0, then it'll be great. Well, guess what? We didn't beat Liverpool 6-0, you know? And so you need a plan first, and you need a plan that everyone buys into, that everyone has had input into, that has had a number of iterations, that the fans and other key stakeholders have had some sight of and some ability to influence. And then once it is agreed by consensus, it then represents the vision for Everton over the next 1, 2, 5, 10 years. And we can all cling on to it. We can see identity in the clubs around us. We can see identity in the clubs that have surpassed us, the Brentfords, the Brightons, that I'm sick and tired of talking about. We are a great football club, but all we've got is a history and a great fan base. The future's grim unless we get our shit together. And our shit has never been less together than it is right now.
No, I, you know, couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, I obviously asked for, you know, what fans on Twitter felt before, you know, what they'd like to see, if they could bring more tangible improvements. Just to run through, you know, quick few highlights to them: clear communications, long-term vision, regular, transparent and honest, good and bad news. They felt that was the only way to build trust. There was elements of what Joe said there, actually. Well, let's, you know, just as important sometimes to communicate in adversity as it is, you know, when you're doing well and you beat Liverpool 6-0.
Well, it's absolutely maybe more important. It's more important in adversity. It is absolutely more important in adversity. Definitely. Because then you get people behind you, and there is, you know, there can be an us against them. There definitely can be that positivity. You know, you've seen Liverpool do that. You saw the Manchester United teams of Sir Alex Ferguson use exactly that. You know, in adversity, people come together. The only people who've come together at Everton are the fans, right? The board didn't stand up. We sacked managers every time, you know, the weather changed. The only constant is the fans, and they deserve so much better.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more, Roger. Deliver on promises.
Some promises first. Yeah. I mean, make some bloody promises.
Fulfill what you say in the appropriate timescales. A disconnect repair, someone said. Just a couple of things that people said. Welcome fans into the football club a bit more. Give fans access to players more often. They're just a few anyway. Someone said reinstate an AGM. So, you know, fans have got, you know, I don't think fans feel the need to know everything. And I know there's a, you know, there is a desperation in 2023. But, you know, it's a 24/7 business now, isn't it? You know, 365 days a year. Fans are wanting more and more information, you know, more than ever, you know, and they'll find ways of trying to root that out if they're not getting in. It's not forthcoming. I think, you know, I think as fans, we just want to see something. anything. We don't need to know all the details, the ins and the outs, but just give us a clue. You know, what are we looking to be? Who are Everton? You know, what are you going to try and do to bring this club back to where it needs to be? You know, and I think some of that, you know, could help, you know, certainly put a path forward. Obviously, I do still feel, you know, the chairman, Bill Kenwright, does need to leave the football club. That's my personal opinion. I don't think we can start to rebuild with an identity until that man does leave the football club, because, you know, that trust is just totally eroded at the moment. And he's been the most unsuccessful chairman, you know, in our football club's history. So, you know, rightly so, some just don't want this fella at the football club anymore, and they want a new dawn, a new way to believe in this football club. And I think that has to come. Joe, you know, it is hard at the moment, isn't it? You know, for you as someone from the media, what role do you feel fans can have? Do you think fans can be too demanding at times, or do you think it's a sign of the times and this is more a sports thing at the moment, because it is, you know, that 24/7 business now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the world has changed dramatically in a very short space of time, and, you know, there are businesses that are, you know, far far savvier and far better run than Everton that have and will struggle to kind of adapt it. And the reality is it's probably impossible to find the happy medium. You know, there will always be an element of the fans wanting to know more, or a belief that you've given, you know, you've weakened your position by giving away too much by trying to accommodate that. And you know, there are so many kind of very difficult things for you know, historic institutions like Everton as well, bearing in mind that their heritage is a bit easier if you're a smaller club that's on a positive trajectory to start kind of bringing in people as you go along with it. When you've got something that's already there to protect, it's a little bit harder to try and open up and know what to concede on. I think, you know, communication is difficult. Communication and engagement is difficult. There's no two ways about it. And you know, it must also be very difficult for the people who are actually paid to work in communications at the club, because, you know, how can they kind of, you know, when you look at the chaos that's going on above them, how can they put a positive message out there, or even get a message out there in the first place?
Joe, just to add to that as well, you know, and I think this is a narrative that people need to hear, you know, that actually, you know, the people who will be employed to communicate, like you say, can only communicate if they're allowed to.
Yeah, you know, and if there's given coherent ideas in the first place, there's a coherent strategy, as I say, you know, too often it's one person sold one thing, another person sold another, and then, you know, the next thing you know, you've written one thing and someone's saying, well, where have you got that one from? You know, well, you know, from your team. And it's inherently chaotic. But I think, yeah, I think there has to be an acceptance that these things aren't easy to get right, and that mistakes will be made. But I think that what there has to be a realization from the club is the fact that you know, in 2023, you can't just ignore the fan base, and you know, you can't just shut up shop and hope that everything gets away, or hope for that better day when results start improving, or, you know, wait for the new signing or the big win and then release all your news in the aftermath of that for a week and shut up for another 3 weeks. You know, I think there has to be an acceptance that this is them and have to open up, have to try and engage, I think there has to be an acceptance that there's a problem in the first place. And I'm still not convinced that there's awareness in the hierarchy and at the very top of Everton. I'm still not convinced that there is awareness of how deep the problems lie. I think there's probably still a belief that this is a superficial issue that's based largely around results. And unfortunately, I think that there's a degree of arrogance to that position, and a degree of naivety. At the end of the day, I think the way that Everton has conducted itself publicly over the past few months hasn't been very good at all. And I think that in order, you know, the relationship between large sections of the fan base and the club is as bad as it has probably ever been. And I think, I'm not saying that can't be repaired, but I think for there to be a sustainable reparation of that relationship, it has to start. It can only start by an acceptance that, you know, mistakes may have been made over, you know, there might have been a few mistakes or misjudgments or misinterpretations or whatever over the past few months, you know, maybe even longer. So I think that first and foremost, Everton need to show a degree of humility. And if they show a degree of humility, then that could potentially provide a foundation for an improvement. But I think that also two things that are worth bearing in mind on that is, one, really, that has to start now. It's already too late for it to start, really, because at the end of the year, Everton need everything pointing in the right direction going into the beginning of next season, because it's going to be hard. It's clearly going to be difficult. Everton have a weak squad. They have little money to make the vast improvements that are necessary. Now, okay, they have a manager who is probably as adept as anyone can be to keeping a team up in the circumstances that Everton find themselves in. And they're perhaps strengthened slightly by some of the likes of Luton coming up. With all respect to Luton, you know, you think it's going to be very difficult for them to adapt. One of the things that was problematic for Everton last season was the fact that nobody got cut adrift at the bottom of the table, and it was any three from five or six rather than every two or any one. But it's clearly going to be a very difficult season. The best thing that Everton can do within that's proactively and that's within the biggest attribute they've got access to, is within their reach if they make the right strides, is the fan base, which, as we've covered, is genuinely worth points. Should be doing everything they can right now to try and get them back on board, so that when Fulham comes to L4 on August the 12th for that kickoff at 3 o'clock, we know the fans were behind the players. But it's got to be more than that. The fan base's got to be behind the club as a whole. You know, instead, as it stands, is going to be the problem of, you know, if the interim board is in place as it is, and obviously this is in relation to one person in particular, but are those director seats empty for the first game of the season? Or are they not? You know, does Ken Wright turn up? Does he not? And all of a sudden, the whole circus, the whole attention becomes about something that's not the football. And all of a sudden, attention's split and focus is split, and it becomes, you know, things become distracted and you lose sight of the goal, which is keeping Everton up. You're starting under a shroud of controversy and contention, and that isn't ideal. The other thing I think is worth kind of, I've written a story on this today, is I think that, you know, should the change go through as we expect, should the investment from MSP come in, I think the people that are talking to Mashiri at the minute, and obviously these things are advanced, but they're never done until they're done, and they might not be done until the beginning of the season because of, you know, the complexities of this process and the negotiations that will take place. But I do think there's an awareness that the people that are most likely to be involved in Everton going after this summer, I think there is an awareness of the problems that currently exist in relation to communication, and there is a desire to address it. The question will be, at what point do they get the opportunity to start that, and to what extent are they shackled by the consequences of the negotiations and whatever remains from the old guard as it crosses into a slightly newer one? We won't find that out for a couple of weeks at least, I don't think. But there is an awareness, and that does perhaps offer a kernel of hope that maybe things could get better in the long term. But right here, right now, I mean, the situation needs to be addressed, you know, as soon as possible, because we've got, 5 weeks now before the beginning of the season. You know, Everton as a football club is strongest when it's united with its fan base, because that's ultimately where it derives its greatest source of power from. Surely, you know, you might not be able to go and spend £40 million on a new striker or, you know, £20 million on a winger. But what you can do is you can start getting your messaging out there that there's a relationship with the fans, that then there's a belief, there's an understanding it's broken, and there's an acceptance that Everton need to make the first move in that. So that in terms of what the club can do of its own accord, you know, it makes sure that it's in a strong position it possibly can become August the 12th.
Definitely, Joe. And, you know, I think you've given some really good tangible examples, really, of a way forward. And like you say, you know, it should have happened probably last week, last month, 6 months ago. But, you know, it certainly has to start happening now, because, you know, every day that the ticks by is a day closer to the season. And as you say, you know, that controversy that will then start to build for all the wrong reasons again. We all want a season where we are united and we can get behind the side. So, you know, I do hope that some of this is resolved. Roger, just listening to Joe's, you know, kind of summary on that and some of the suggestions about a way forward, if you were to at least give one or two, not solutions, but one or two improvements, I don't think they're going to be too hard to find or dig deep to think of. What would you say if the club were listening about what they could start to do now to start to look for a way forward and to improve the situation from where we are currently sat here today?
Well, I think both of you have hit several nails squarely on the head. Joe's absolutely right about humility being needed. Sadly, you're also right that the chairman has to leave because he has no humility. He does not realise there's a problem. And I do not believe Farhad Moshiri realises there's a problem. So we have delusion at the very highest levels of the football club. We do have to hope that the MSP people will come in. Doesn't take this long. Okay, these negotiations are not that complex. It shouldn't be 4 or 5 weeks away from where we are now. And my fear would be that those negotiations that are happening, those real conversations that are happening between real people, one of whom is Farhad Moshiri, that the potential investors are not necessarily getting the assurances they need. And Moshiri is reluctant to give them the control and power they need to transform this organisation. So I'm worried about that. Until the deal's done, I'm worried that it won't be done. It has to happen because the existing incumbents are not capable of humility and suffer from delusion. So our problems are huge. And I agree with everything that you and Joe have said in that regard. You have to first acknowledge there's a problem before you can try and find a solution. We all know that. It's been well documented with issues like mental health and addiction, whatever. You know, you have to first say, you know, my name's Roger, I've got a problem, before you can address the problem. The club doesn't realise there's a problem. The people at the highest level of the club do not realise there's a problem. One thing I'd change immediately is I would stop today in the press on the website. It's the most ridiculous piece of nonsense I've ever seen. This is a football club that puts on its own website stories about itself, which may or may not be true and are reported in the press, very rarely in the fantastic Liverpool Echo. That's just ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous to put that on the website. If that is an attempt at communication, it's an insult, okay? What does it do, you know? It's the BBC gossip column snippets.
Yeah, it's just to jump in there. Just jump in there, Roger. I share the confusion over that, because, and in fairness to Evan, just to point out that Liverpool also do the same. Again, I'm absolutely confounded as to why they would do that. And then they tweet it off their own channels. You're trying to work out, are they accepting that this rumour is true or not? And you just, exactly. it's bonkers. But Liverpool do also do it, as strange as it is.
Well, maybe people in the football club, senior people in the football club, don't know we're doing it. Maybe it's just one of those funny little things that, you know, Auntie Ethel's been doing every, and nobody knows it's happening. I don't know. I mean, the one fundamental thing that has to happen is that we need to trust and empower the professionals that we have employed to do their jobs. That could be Kevin Thirlwell, it could be Sean Dyche, it could be a head of communications, it could be a finance director. People who are professionals on and off the pitch, employed by Everton, need to be trusted to do their jobs and not interfered with by Farhad Moshiri, Bill Kenwright, and their various acolytes. It's a nonsense. That is our problem. Football clubs and businesses that are successful empower people and bring in people with greater skills than the owners and the shareholders and greater skills than the overall boss, because they want to be challenged and they want to improve themselves. And we've got to show a desire to improve. Right now, Joe is absolutely right, but the extent of our ambition is staying in the Premier League. I mean, shoot me now. That's not my football club. That's not the ambition I want. And I don't expect us to be winning the Premier League, but I'd like us to be moderately competitive, not aiming for 17th. We are fortunate that perhaps Luton, Bournemouth, Nottingham Forest will all be worse than us. And that's about the only way we're staying up right now, because our squad is terrible. And I don't know whether or not Dyche knows what he can do, any money he has to spend, any players that he wants. I don't know whether he has a transfer budget. I don't feel that Thirlwell is empowered. And I don't trust anybody at the football club. And I don't really include Dyche in that, because, you know, I think he's had his legs cut from under him. So we have to trust professionals, get some better professionals in where we need them, which is obviously around the commercial side, the cultural side, the communication side. And we have to trust them to do their job. And hopefully the good folk of MSP Sports Capital will come in and will be able to do that. Until they do. Until there is change at the top, until there's a brand new board, until Bill Kenwright is no longer the chairman of our football club, and I think until Farhad Moshiri is no longer the majority shareholder None of those changes are really going to happen.
Thank you,
that's
Roger.
Cheered everyone up.
Yeah, no, you know, but, you know, some very, you know, clear examples of a man who's very experienced in business as well, you know, so, you know, I do hope at times that Everton are listening to these things. I had a conference that I organised the other day, and we had Deloitte and McLaren attend and speak at the conference, and it was interesting actually listening to McLaren, obviously linked to MSP, who've invested heavily in some of the things. I think he said that they stick everywhere. McLaren exists to win. You know, that's the strategy, you know, not just to survive, not just to compete. McLaren exists to win. You know, everyone's very clear about that. You know, and the other one that struck me was one of the mottos, which is, they empower people to make decisions at the point of most information and intelligence. So nothing's, as we talked about, the streamlining earlier on, nothing's kind of fed up that chain. Actually, if you know, Joe's the media guy, you know, and he's, you know, the fella trained to communicate on behalf of the football club, he makes the decision, communicates. You know, if Roger's the director of football, you know, he knows what his remit is, he knows what his budget is, because it's all decided before he goes into transfer window. Actually, you know, Roger makes that decision, you know, and shakes the hands and decides that actually this is the way that we're going. It doesn't go up to the next person in the chain or two or three people up in the chain, and, you know, we lose 48 hours. Actually, you know, Roger and Joe are making decisions at that point of most information and intelligence, you know, and something we can learn a lot from. You know, it's not rocket science. This information's out there. They only have to flick TED Talks on, and, you know, you can see a lot of these little snippets that you can find. So it's not as though we're talking about revolutionary things. You know, there's businesses and experts that can advise and direct Everton in the right way. I'm sure there's people at the football club actually who've, you know, have earned the trade and actually know the stuff and can deliver if they're empowered, you know, and allowed to do so. And some of this streamlining does happen. In terms of my suggestion, just based on what yourself, Roger, and Joe have said said already, I'll say, you know, what you say is just as important as how you say it. You know, we're talking about Kevin Fellwell potentially doing an interview. Could Kevin Fellwell have gone on Toffee TV? Could he have gone to The Echo, spoke to them? You know, because he'd gone out to a few from the Bullens and some of the other content providers. You know, as you said before, Roger, we've got, you know, Talking the Blues. There's so many good, you know, angles there. Your business podcast, you know, could someone out there go out from the football club and talk? It does seem as though we're reluctant to actually get our big boy pants on and go out and, you know, and actually speak about our line of business as a football club. You know, there'll always be suggestion, well, what other football club is doing this? Well, maybe they're not, but, you know, we're moving forwards. Can we do things differently? Can we be innovative? Can we start to trust, you know, the fans? Because, like you say, if, you know, if we don't set the narrative, so if we're not going to provide the information, then the information's still going to get written. You know, it's still going to get talked about on podcasts. You know, what will happen is, because we haven't got the full picture, you know, we make our own minds up. You know, we decide based on what limited information we do have. So often when people don't communicate, they allow other people to have, you know, a wrong slant on it, maybe, you know, or the narrative is changed. You know, we see it all the time in the media where, you know, there's wild stories from some national papers, you know, talking about, you know, speculation about what's going on at Everton Football Club. And half the time they're just filling in information because they don't have, you know, that vision from Everton. They don't have that, you know, that information to actually write these stories. So they just make their own minds up. And that's my viewpoint in anyway. But I do feel we need to trust the fans a little bit more. You know, we you know, it is 2023 now. Get out there, speak to fans, engage with them properly. You know, Sean Dyche, Kevin Fellwell. It's all right to put them in a comfy room with pre-scripted questions, but actually get them out there speaking to people, you know, speaking to fans. Let them ask, you know, ask proper questions, you know, and really get into who, you know, Alex Iwobi is, or, you know, who Seamus Coleman is, and set his own angles, you know, rather than trying to really shape that narrative. You know, I do think that trust element certainly needs to be built. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, as always. And Joe and Roger, thank you very much for coming on the Bobblers podcast this evening. As always, I'm sure I'd like to have you both back on, and I'll try and get that in the diary in the future. But bye for now. We'll be back shortly with our podcast, probably now looking at the new season, hopefully with a few signings. Is that too much to ask? We'll see over the next few weeks as we move into July.